Flatheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings episode 91. Go big or go home. Farewell, Robbie. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, brought to you around the world on the Cigar Federation Network, rebroadcasting the Armed Forces Radio Network. You'll notice I'm wearing my poppy to honor the veterans of Canada as we come up to Canadian Remembrance Day, remembering the fallen veterans and the veterans who have served and are still alive, remembering you guys today and all week and certainly through the weekend. It's not just a holiday, it's a day of remembrance. Sharing Our Pairings is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Gurkha Cigars manufactures the world's best cigars. Go down to your local B&M, check it out today. Do it. Buy a cigar. Do it today. Don't wait. Well, maybe after the show. I am joined, as always. Oh, wait. No, we have a special guest co-host tonight. Robbie Rass from Mombacho. Robbie Rass, of course, is the brand manager for Mombacho. Rob, thanks very much for joining us here on Sharing Our Pairings. How's it going today, brother?
Thank you for that special introduction.
You're welcome.
No, things are good, man. I'm bittersweet, right? Obviously, this is my last episode as co-host. For the most part, who knows, I might show up every now and again. But moving on to the other side of the industry, and we could talk about that more as the show goes on. But
at least your boss isn't a jerk.
it's true. No, I just came back from Grenada and spent some time with several of the folks from Mombacho and time in the factory at Casa Pavilion. There are no jerks in the company, man.
No,
and I know.
I was meaning your former boss, really.
That guy. Yeah.
That was a jab at Big L there.
Yeah. Well, boss is a strong word, but but no, it's a beautiful company, man. Beautiful people, and I feel pretty blessed to have this opportunity. So we don't need to get too sappy about it.
Fair enough. Maybe in the after dark, just to let you know, I'm actually going to be visiting our friends at Mombacho, not this weekend, but the following weekend, kind of coming in, following the Robbie trail, as it were. I haven't been to Grenada since 2013. Just reminded to audiences of Sharing Our Pairings, where we talk about cigars and beverage pairing. Right now we're doing a little bit of flashback, throwback, whatever back.
Sure.
Pairing the Cigar Federation.
Collective.
I took my foot band off, and I'm like, Tiger Kitty, sharp, soft, something. First of all, I want to say, this cigar, and I don't know if it's because of the San Andreas Maduro, but wow, this has aged really, really well, and I'm really sad that I only have a handful of these left, because I feel like I just want to keep aging this bad boy out for like a couple more months, maybe another year.
Yeah, this cigar was launched when the Cigar Federation store was launched, or very closely thereafter. I don't remember the exact dates, but right when Logan and I were first taking over Cigar Federation, so 2013.
Sounds right.
So this cigar has nearly 3 years on it already, and there was only one batch done. There's still some left. So
still some left.
If you pick up any cigars or any of these collectives from the Cigar Federation store, they're well aged.
I mean, don't get me wrong; it's no Liga Maestro. I mean, you know, let's dial it back. But for a cigar that's been sitting around for 3 years, and honestly, I would say that the majority of cigars that I've tried that have sat around for 3 years, you really would lose the majority. I mean, most cigars, especially non-Cubans, they're not designed to be aged for 3 years. They're designed to be smoked within a certain period of time. I mean, all the wrapper, binder, filler typically has been aged, the wrapper especially. When they come out, they're designed to be smoked. They're sort of optimal taste point, with the exception of some cigars that might come out a little bit early and maybe need a, you know, 3-4 months rest. This is unusual, and I'm digging it. It's hard for me to remember the profile 3 years ago, and maybe while I'm yammering on, you can maybe pull up the tasting notes. But I remember this being way more in your face, way more of a spice bomb. And right now, it's like a nougaty, chocolatey, like lightly spiced dessert cigar, and I'm digging it.
Yeah, it's definitely calmed down. It was a bit of a heater when it first came out. It was never full strength, but definitely had some spice to it. The spice has been dialing back through the years, and I remember it as being very, the nougat was in there, kind of a almost like a marzipan almond kind of sweetness in there as well.
Yeah.
And definitely chocolatey. The difference that I'm noticing is it's more of a dry cocoa now than
that's
more
good way
like,
to put it.
Yeah, than more of a like a milk chocolate.
Milk chocolate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit more of a dry cocoa.
Yeah, I like that. I actually kind of find that flavor, I think, works a little bit better in a cigar than the milk chocolate because it's, you know, I like nuance. I like cigar flavors to kind of play around and not be too dominant. Just a reminder, this was originally blended by, as well, was, not originally, is blended by Ezra Zion. That was, I think, one of the first projects that Cigar Federation store ever did for sort of a Cigar Federation exclusive, using a San Andreas Cafe Claro wrapper. And and there you go. Now I remembered why this is so good. It's got that magic pixie dust medio tiempo tobacco, right? And so I don't know. Like I assume they must have sold their souls to AJ Fernandez for that because I think and maybe you can answer this question better. Is medio tiempo available for anyone else other than AJ, or is he just like the best well known for that?
I really have no idea.
Fair enough.
With the, I frankly, I don't even remember where the tobaccos came from or what factory this was made at.
I have no clue.
Yeah,
it's been three years. It's a lifetime in the cigar industry.
It's been a while, and I don't want to speak out of turn and say it was made at this factory because chances are I'd be wrong. But
yeah, who knows?
I remember the Cafe Claro wrapper was something different, and it was fermented in a different way. I don't remember exactly what. There's a QR code, and I wonder if that still works.
Actually, you should. Well, I was going to say test that out, but now I know you're running off of like a, you know, third hand. everything could get jacked right up if you decide to throw QR codes at it. Well, I guess if you do mobile, you'll probably be safe. But
yeah. If you guys watch the show regularly, you'll notice that my camera feed is lacking a little bit. I brought my laptop with me down to Granada, and the humidity in the air apparently did not jibe very well with my computer itself, so that had to get sent out to get fixed today. So I'm running off of an old laptop, so if I drop off, I apologize. I'll hop back on as quickly as I can.
It's got that soft cinematic feel, like you're a actress from the mid-1950s.
Mm-hmm. Gotta use that soft lens, baby.
Yeah, it's all about that soft lens. Makes everyone look good.
Yeah, it does.
So let's get after it. I mean, you know, this is our last Sharing Our Pairing show together. For those who aren't aware, we started this a little over 2 years ago. 2 years ago? 2 years. Yeah, 2 years ago. Yeah. In June, I want to say June of 2014. And this is our 91st episode. We've had a lot of fun together. I think, you know, I've certainly enjoyed the show. We've had kind of a fun journey of pairing. At the time, there was really no such thing in the market. Now, every time I turn around at some of the magazines, you know, they're always talking about whiskey pairing. They're always talking about beer pairing. And I'm going to take this rare moment to pat ourselves in the back and say, realistically, 2 years ago, no one was talking about this stuff. You did not see this in trade publications, and no one talked about it. Now, you know, everyone does it. And you see it all over the place in cigar reviews. Our good friends over at Developing Palettes, a lot of what they do is geared towards pairing, and they talk about pairing, which is awesome. And I think that's a good thing. I think for the most part, most people are going to pair a cigar with something, whether that's a Coca-Cola, whether that's a spirit, whether that's a beer. Most people don't just drink water unless, you know, you're a hardcore nerd like us and you're trying to do a cigar review. But it's a lot of fun, and we've had a lot of fun. I think, you know, over the last two and a bit years, I think this has been the highlight of my week, really.
Yeah, no, man, this has been doing this pairing show has been great. I've learned a lot on this show.
Yeah.
And I think I've probably learned more practical stuff from this show than Cigar Chat, frankly. I mean, Cigar Chat, you learn a lot about the industry and individual companies and things like that. But with this is very hands-on, and we've gone everything from a pairing that tasted like bile to to, you know, these pairings that it's like, wow, I want to stop everything in the world and just focus on this for the next 2 hours. So,
and just for a throwback, if you want to check that out, that was the La Gloria pairing. And I remember that like it was yesterday. Robbie had this wise idea that he would pair, I think it was the La Gloria Esteli, because I was pairing the La Gloria Black, which is a great cigar, by the way. And you had the wise idea to pair it with ginger ale. And I remember thinking, bro, like I'm not a fan of ginger ale at the best of times. And needless to say, you'll have to check out the video, but it was highly entertaining for me, at least.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed that. I mean, that was probably one of our That was probably within the first 25 shows.
Yeah.
And we still talk about
our legs. Yeah.
That was a soda episode. And I remember I had and I followed that up with an A&W, cream soda, and that pairing was fantastic. So
it's really hard to go wrong with an A&W cream soda.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I figured I love ginger ale, and I thought, you know, we'll give it a shot. And yeah, not so much.
No bueno.
No bueno. Maybe pair it with a Cameroon, but that's it.
It's all about that Cameroon pairing. Pairs with everything, I'm told.
That's what I hear. That's the rumor going around town.
Just a reminder to the audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings episode 91. Go big or go home. Farewell, Robbie. We're broadcast on the Armed Forces Radio Network, heard around the world, and of course picked up on every podcast catcher in the world. If you're listening live, thanks for tuning in. If you want to catch it on the road like I do, because I don't know why, but I listen to myself all the time to try and get better, you can subscribe on any podcast catcher in the world. You can even skip our commercials. Oh, wait, that's right. We're commercial free. This particular segment, though, is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Gurkha Cigars, makers of the Heritage and the Heritage Maduro. I'm probably more of a Heritage Maduro guy, but I've heard the Heritage is, I think it got like a 93 or something. So you should check out that at your local B&M. Again, your local B&M is going to have Gurkha. Everyone has Gurkha. There's a Gurkha that's out there that's right for you. And we're doing a little pairing. I am kind of doing a little bit of throwback here. I decided to do, I went with what I know, which is whiskey. I could have gone beer, but I figured I'd get pretty out of control pretty fast. So I decided to go whiskey. Now, interestingly, I thought that I'd paired this first whiskey on the show before, but I went through all our show notes and I sent you samples, and you can see, I'm going to hide the label for a second. You can see I've drank a fair amount of this bottle, but I've never had it on the show before. I don't know how that happened. This is the Takatsuru 21 Pure Malt. And I know what you might be thinking, John, what are you doing drinking a blended whiskey? You shut your mouth. Blended whiskeys are good. So this is a blended whiskey with an age statement. What that means is all the blends that have gone into this whiskey are minimum 21 years old. That means that if you do the math of that, you take the average, a lot of those whiskeys that are going into this could be 30, could be 35, could be older. And when you talk about Japanese whiskey, I mean, there's not a lot of whiskey that's on the market that has been around that long. This is from Nikko Whiskey Company. we've talked about Masataka Takatsuru time and time again. He's really the godfather that worked in Scotland. He wanted to bring whiskey making to Japan and really apprenticed at the Hazelburn Distillery. There's a lot of great history there. You can look that up. That dates all the way back to 1918. And he was working at the Yamazaki Distillery as their master distiller. And then he left in 1934 to form what would later become Nikko Whiskey. And, they're one of the two premier whiskey houses really in Japan. There's some independents, which put out some really, really good stuff. So this is the Takatsuru 21, comes in at 43% ABV, which we've found is kind of the sweet spot. Japan likes to do their whiskey at 43, and I respect that. Earned the world's best blended malt in 2010. You can see it's kind of got you wouldn't even really call that amber. It's like a dark amber, almost approaching like a brown ale color. On the nose, this is what you want your whiskey to smell like. It's like honey and some spicy fruits with hints of strawberry. And I mean, you know something like this, and you're like, okay, now I want to take some sips. And obviously, I've been taking some sips because I needed to get my vocal cords warmed up. So I'm going to take some more sips. I'm going to let Robbie wax poetic about his first pairing tonight.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm getting a lot more spice out of this collective within the last, 5 minutes. The spice is really ramped up, which is interesting because the last time I'd smoked it, I remember thinking, and we can go back and watch the show, commenting that it had mellowed out, but the spice has come back with a vengeance for me. I don't know if you're experiencing that or not. My first pairing is something I've definitely paired on this show before, and I'm going Japanese whiskey as well with the Hibiki 12, and I've definitely paired this. I know that I have on this show, and this is also a blend of aged whiskeys. So it falls into the same category as John's. It's, you know, blended whiskeys with the youngest being 12 years, so there could be some 20, could be some 25, who knows. A little bit about Hibiki. The reason that I brought this one out for this particular episode is because, A, I needed a third whiskey, and and B, I was at my local liquor store the other day, and I saw a bottle of it for $150, and I'm thinking, wait a second. I paid, or maybe it was 120. It was over $100.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, man, I paid like 45 for this at Costco.
Whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think they're just not really making it that much anymore, or at least it's definitely not as widely available as it used to be.
Wow.
Even when you look online, the pricing online is, you know, in line with what I saw. So it's only a 12-year-old product, but or at least 12 years, and it is blended, but it's a fantastic, fantastic whiskey.
Yeah.
It's shiny amber in color. I'm just going to pull some info from the website. It comes out of Centauri whiskey, and we've talked about Centauri a lot.
A lot.
So we don't really need to go into that, and I can't talk about it the way that John can, but...
Well, I can tell you that Beam Suntory is now one of the largest drink manufacturers in the world. They're like huge, and they own, I can't remember how many distilleries in Scotland. What I like about that, because, you know, a lot of people talk about foreign ownership of Scottish distilleries, and, you know, the concern is always that they're going to come in and change things. And consistently from what I've heard is they come in, they put an investment in, and they say, don't change anything. We love what you do. The reason we bought your company is because we believe in what you do. We just want to give you some capital to continue doing what you're doing and just keep doing that. And I respect that. I respect that a lot.
Wouldn't that be great if that's how it worked all the time?
Right?
You'd think. I mean, it stands to reason. You're buying the company for – we're getting on a tangent. You're buying the company for a reason, right? You like their product. And we want to keep doing what you're doing. We want to give you more capital to expand production, to expand distribution. And when you expand production, you expand distribution, sometimes the quality changes a little bit.
Yep.
That's just bound to happen. When you have, you know, more cooks, somebody might overcook something or undercook something. It happens. But I don't know if that's the norm or if that's you know, a unique instance. I would say
it feels unique to me, having been on the other end of quote-unquote mergers and buyouts. My experience has been that typically they start out trying to keep things the same, and then, you know, the first thing they want to do is say, well, we like the way you do things, but we want to change some of these core fundamental things about your culture. It's like, well, like you said, you bought us out for a reason because you thought we were doing something successful, but now you want to come and change that formula. Do you really think we're going to continue to have the same success when you change that formula? We're getting super political tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. What the hell? We're not talking politics. We're not talking American politics at all.
We are not. We might talk some. We might talk some Westworld later, though.
I haven't watched it yet.
What?
Say what?
Say what? Robbie, you're missing the best show that has aired on non-network television, because it's HBO, in probably the last 8 or 9 years.
It's on the list. It's on the list.
It should be like number one on the list.
Well, it's. I tend to like to watch shows once there's a completed season, because I don't like waiting for another episode. I want to be able to watch all of it. That's why I like Netflix, is they give me the whole thing at once.
That is nice. Although not getting to bed till 4 a.m, not so nice.
True story. So back to this Hibiki 12. Let's see. Shiny amber in color. And I mean, I think it's more like a straw, really.
Yeah, that's definitely straw.
To me, than shiny amber. But when you look at it in the bottle, looks a little bit darker, yeah? So there you go.
They get that magic glass or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. This bottle is classy, though. I like
it. Super cool.
Kind of Art Deco style with the I don't know what you call these ribs. Ribbed for your pleasure.
Giggity.
The nose, pineapple, plum, raspberry, honey, and hibiscus.
Say what?
Now, I definitely get the honey and the plum and even that raspberry. But, I mean, I my nose can't tell you what hibiscus smells like.
You know what? Now that the weird thing is, now that you say that and talk about planting a flavor in my nose,
yeah,
I'm getting like a little bit of like that light sort of chlorophyllic hibiscus. But I mean, it's like buried under there.
But we're drinking different things.
Yeah, but you know, they're blends, and I know for a fact that there's hibiki in this.
Oh well, there you go.
I'm just kidding. There's no hibiki in this. I'm just making stuff up.
I went with it. The palate, banana, pomegranate, custard, and pink pepper. Now, I'm going to take all of that and say that it's got a nice sweetness up front. There's a little bit of spice on the finish, and leave it at that. It's not too heavy. It's a beautiful whiskey in the sense that I feel like you can have it at any time. It doesn't have to.
Yes.
It's versatile, yeah? You can, anytime. You can have it with breakfast. No, you could, you don't, it's not like a Lagavulin where it's like there's a specific instance for that. Mm-hmm. Not there's not every time where I want to have, you know, a big peat bomb. But this, in a way, it's usually anything that really that I've noticed that has that 12-year statement on it is going to be pretty versatile. It's not going to be too strong. It's not going to be too light. It's not going to be too oaky or whatever. It's not going to be overbearing in any direction. It's going to be very smooth with a little bit of that spice and kick at the end. And that's really what you get here. The nose is very, very sweet. A lot of sweetness in the nose. You get that sweetness in the front of the palate. And the finish lingers a little bit on this one, a little bit more than you'd expect. But it's got a little bit of that spice there that finishes quite nicely. They say the finish is sweet, sour, and complex. There is a little bit. It's sweetness for sure. Well, they say sour, and again, sour for whatever reason. I don't know. Just always holds a negative connotation to me. But sour in like a good way. It's yeah. Very subtle, and it almost gives it that kind of a clean finish at the end.
Yeah, a little bit of tartness.
So how's your pairing going? Sorry.
It's fantastic. It's like freshly, you know, maybe a lighter version of a freshly cut cantaloupe. So it's got that really great sweetness, but not like I find sometimes cantaloupe can be a little sickeningly sweet. And then it's got a little bit of heat. I wouldn't even really describe it as pepper. It's just the alcohol quality of the spirit has a little bit of lasting heat. So sort of between the spirit and between the cigar, now I've kind of got a little bit of pepper rolling on my tongue between draws. And it works because, you know, I do get that chocolate up front on the cigar, and then which kind of blows away that heat, that pepper. Take a sip of the whiskey, get a lot of that sweetness and elegance, the nuance. And, you know, we've done Japanese whiskey a number of times. And I think the reason we keep coming back to it is, first of all, it's very elegant. I think, you know, there's nothing against Japanese whiskey because God knows I certainly love Japanese whiskey or Scottish whiskey. And I certainly have enough bottles to show for it. But I think what Japanese whiskey does really, really well is, as Rob was saying, they make a really elegant whiskey that can be enjoyed at any time, any weather, any occasion, and it's very approachable. And that's really the word I use when I talk about Japanese whiskeys. It's very approachable, especially for people who are not, like, and I know lots of people are really turned off by Scottish whiskey because the flavors are very bold. I mean, you talk about being in the flavor profile of a cigar, they're all full-bodied. I mean, even the light Glenfarclas or Glenrothes, they're still right up there in the medium full category for flavor. Like, their palate is amazing. And some people just can't handle that. They don't want to handle that. Japanese whiskey is nuanced. It's subtle. It's delicate. And my significant other, who just despises Scotch whiskey, like, she just hates it. And we've been to a couple dinners where they had, you know, paired Japanese whiskey with each course, and she loves it. And I'm like, well, I mean, you like Japanese whiskey, but you don't like Scottish whiskey, but she loves Japanese whiskeys, you know, and I think, again, it's just because on the palate, it's really not as much of a palate shock. But getting back to the pairing, I think, you know, even though the quote-unquote strength level of this whiskey may be quite a bit lower than the cigar, it works. The whiskey, and I think we found that time and time again, we've paired a variety of different strength levels of cigars with Japanese whiskey, various Japanese whiskeys, single malts, pure malts, et cetera, et cetera. It works. It's becoming almost like a coffee pairing with cigars, where you compare a Japanese whiskey and you're probably going to have a pretty good experience.
Yeah, you said a lot of things that I would echo. I mean, the approachability of Japanese whiskey, it's almost universal in the sense that I think people like it because it's so smooth. The flavor qualities can be really, really delicate, and you can dig into them if you want and really pick them apart and find things in there that you like. Or you can just sip on it and enjoy it because it's good. my wife's not a big fan of Scotch whiskey. And I think there's a perception that all Scotch whiskey is peated and that all Scotch whiskey is going to taste like that. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. I mean,
especially like as a segment, like peated whiskey is actually like
it's a
5%.
Yeah. But again, I mean, I think the average person doesn't realize that. You think Scotch, you think, oh, it's going to taste like, you know, the stuff they burn when you're over there, which smells great to me anyway. So be that as it may, but that Japanese whiskey is just so much softer, smoother. I don't want to say, I shouldn't say it's softer and smoother, but it's soft, it's smooth, it's delicate, it's not overpowering. Even the cheapest Japanese whiskeys that I've had are still very, very sippable, right? I mean, they're not, it's not burning too much. It's, everything's really smooth. So I can understand why people gravitate towards it. As far as this pairing is concerned, it's great. And I think you're right. We're starting to realize that Japanese whiskey is something that you can pair with just about anything. It's right up there with coffee and rum. I mean, you can really pair just about anything. That delicate sweetness right up front, it just gets your palate ready for a little bit of spice at the end and a little bit of kind of that, that custard is stuck in my head now because, I mean, they've suggested it, but that's really what that sweetness is. It's kind of a, and you said cantaloupe, and you could even really even call them kind of the same thing because it's not an overpowering sweetness. But it's a rounded sweetness. I don't know if rounded makes sense there, but I think you know what I'm trying to say.
And a little bit of
spice in that finish carries you right into the cigar perfectly. So yeah. I feel like even though, like you say, the strength profile of this cigar is much heavier than the strength profile of this Hibiki, but it works.
It works. Just a reminder to audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings episode 91. Go big or go home. Farewell, Robbie. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, here with my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are broadcast around the world, heard on the Armed Forces Radio Network, of course, live on YouTube, live on CigarFederation.com, and picked up the next day everywhere podcast catchers can pick us up, which is everywhere, including Burkina Faso. Thanks very much for our 9 listeners in Burkina Faso. Don't know what you're doing listening to us, but we certainly appreciate it. We actually have a big contingent in Germany, Sweden, the UK, South Korea of all places, Israel. People are checking in from all over the place, and I saw our Mexico numbers jumped up a couple days ago, so that was kind of cool. Maybe some people were on vacation. They're like, hey, what can I listen to while I'm sitting on the beach smoking a cigar? And I thought, let's listen to Sharing Our Pairings and appreciate your listenership.
What about Belgium?
Oh, yeah.
Belgium's big?
And any major country. Actually, the one thing, it was Slovakia. So that's a weird one because, and I don't know if we paired something that was maybe specific to like a really popular beverage in Slovakia, but Slovakia is actually way higher on the list where, you know, you look at the populated countries, like Slovakia is like right up there with Australia. So step up your game, Australia. Come on, step up your game.
So, I'm going to interrupt. Just a quick anecdote. The reason that I bring up Belgium is while I was down in Nicaragua, we went to Casa Favilli, and that's the factory that Bombacho cigars are made at, right there in Granada, and a beautiful building. And I went on a tour with one of the tour guides, a young man named Benoit, and he's from Belgium, and he's been in Nicaragua for a short amount of time, but he loves tobacco. He's learning the industry, and he's giving the tours at Casa Favilli, which anybody can walk in, pay a couple bucks, I think it's $4, and give a tour. And while we were there, there was a group from Germany, there was a group from Norway that came in. I talked to the Norwegians because that's my people.
That's your people.
That's my people. Well, I talked to the Germans too, but you know what I mean. I talked to everybody. But it's great to see all these different nationalities coming in. Anyway, so we're about 5 minutes into the tour, and he said something, and I started talking. And I was talking about something. We were talking about the different regions of Nicaragua, and I was talking about Jalapa. And he kind of looked at me, and he stepped back. He says, "You do the pairing show." And he had no idea.
Kidding.
He had no idea who I was or my background at all. He knew that I was working with Mombacho, so I knew more about cigars than the average person. But he did not know that anything that I was from Cigar Federation or anything like that. So that was really cool.
That is really cool.
So people in other countries really are listening.
That's crazy.
I think that was pretty cool.
I can't wait to have random people stare at me while I'm traveling around the world and be a little unnerved. Hopefully they'll come up and introduce themselves. But I want to get after it because I've got something here that I've not paired since episode 50. I think episode 50 was Get After It or something like that. And I went crazy. I think I had like 4 or 5 Scotch Malt Whiskey Society bottles. I mean, all the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society bottles, for those who aren't aware, are all cask strength. So that's a lot of big whiskeys. And this bad boy, which is on our show page, it's a 25-year-old whiskey. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society code is 3127, 31.27. 31 is the distillery code because they can't, when you have your own bottling, you can't, unless it's bottled by the distillery, you can't use the distillery name. That's the law in Scotland. And it's a good law because it prevents someone from sort of copying or imitating your product. This is cask 27, so it's the 27th bottling from Distillery 31. Now, I can tell you what distillery it is because I'm not under any kind of restrictions. That's how I roll. And it's the Isle of Jura, which is a great distillery. And I'm going to read this off because I love the little tasting notes they have on here. This is originally distilled 27th of September 1988, one of only 245 bottles. Refill Hogshead ex-bourbon cask, which, you know, I love that bourbon. And they say the nose has sea breezes, seaweed, oyster shells, and beach barbecues, but also medicinal elements, good wood, and reasonable sweetness. Giggity. The palate's maritime flavors are joined by citrus, oak, ash, white pepper, coal dust, sweet tobacco, heather smoke, and barbecued meat and shellfish. Boy, I tell you what, that is a lot going on. And this bad boy is at 52.4%. ABV, which officially makes it cask strength because all of the stuff from Scotch Malt Whiskey Society goes straight from the cask and into the bottle, and none of it is colored, and none of it is filtered. So you might look at this and go, well, John, that doesn't really look that dark. You know, it's been 25 years in the cask. That looks really, really light. Yeah, well, you know, that doesn't really tell you anything about this whiskey. And I've had this whiskey. It's a big, big, bold bad boy. But this is probably just a shade darker than your Hibiki. Like this is really, I call this straw, almost apple juice actually colored.
Yeah, that's really, really light in color. Absolutely.
And I mean, on the nose, absolutely this combination of barbecue meat. It's got like an undercurrent of a metallic note. Like I definitely get a metallic note. And that sort of, I don't know if you'd call it coal dust, like that, like creosote, like burning creosote, just hints of that, which is usually an indication. They call it lightly peated, which always makes me laugh. And it's like, if I can smell creosote on your whiskey, bro, that like, I know that's lightly peated to you, but that's an indication that's got some peat to it. So I'm going to take some sips here and let you get after it for your second pairing of the night.
Yeah, man, I'm switching continents and I'm going with some American whiskey. And I believe I've paired this on the show as well. Now, this is a special bottle that I got from a Cigar Federation member, and I couldn't remember his name, and I went back to my messages here to check.
Was it past Jimmy?
No, it wasn't, and his name is gone.
What?
Yeah, like, oh, it was Steve. Oh, Steve Wegner was his name.
Oh, yeah, right.
And
Steve's from California, isn't he?
He's from Colorado. And which will make sense as soon as I tell you what my whiskey is.
That's right.
This is a Colorado whiskey. It's a Stranahan's.
Oh, baby.
And this is their Snowflake Edition, which...
So good.
They do... it's a limited release. They do these... I believe they do them twice a year now. I could be wrong. There's not a ton of information out there. There's actually an article from Outside Magazine, from Outside Online... about the Snowflake, and this was December of 2013, which is predates this bottle that I have here. And they show people lining up, hundreds of hardy whiskey lovers lined up in early frigid hours of December 7th in order to purchase the latest limited batch from Stranahan's. Temperatures hovered around zero for much of that morning, and there's hundreds of people out there waiting to get this stuff. That's dedication, my friend. This is the, again, they do so many different years. This is from, batch 17. So this was the 17th time that they did the Snowflake. And this is the Long's Peak. This is from 2015. It was distilled on May 1st of 2012. So it was only 3 years old. And when it was bottled. This is bottle number 633 of 1800. And this is all handwritten on the bottle, which I don't know if you'll be able to see any of that. But it's all handwritten on there. And they're not messing around with this stuff. Stranahan's, we've talked about several times. We were introduced to Stranahan's by Jonathan Drew, who I believe Jonathan knows the master distiller, Whiskey Rob is what he is everywhere. You follow him on social media anywhere. And it says his last name on here, but it's his signature, so I can't really read it. So we'll just call him Whiskey Rob. But I believe Jonathan knows him, and that was how I was introduced to it. And that was when Steve reached out to me and said, "Hey, I live in Colorado. If you want some, you know, you want some, let me know." And he worked it out, sent me a bottle of the regular Stranahan's, which now regular Stranahan's Colorado whiskey you can find everywhere.
Yeah,
or I can anyway. It's and I'm in California, so it makes sense. It's readily available. I can go down to my Safeway and get it. So that's success for them. So good for them. They also have a Black Diamond, I think is what it's called, is another iteration that they do. Yep. And I think they also have like a 10 or a 12 year.
Yeah.
And I, again, I could be speaking out of turn on some of that stuff, but you get the idea. The Snowflake, you can only get at the distillery, and it sells out within a couple of hours. It's like some of these beer releases that are really, really hard to get your hands on.
Now, before you go any further, I just want to give some props out to Steve, because Steve was on the last Cigar Federation Safari down at Drew Estate, and Steve brought a bottle of Snowflake, and that was the first. I know you had shared some with me, and ironically, I had not tried it prior to going down, and so we were tearing it up a little bit at Safari. Everyone brought at least one or two bottles, and we had all the bottles lined up, and I saw the Snowflake, and I was like, I was stunned. I was like, what? And I kid you not, and Tripp's just commenting in the chat room there, the bottle lasted like 8 minutes flat, and it was drained. And that was like, everyone had like one, and then Jonathan saw the bottle. And of course, as soon as Jonathan loves Snowflakes, he went crazy. And yeah, I mean, props to Steve bringing that out, because you know, that's money out of his pocket. But all he could think was, I can't wait to share this with my fellow brothers of the leaf. And props to him. Anyways, carry on, Robbie.
Yeah, no, I don't really have a whole lot else to say about it. It's 94 proof, so 47% ABV. So a little bit higher than what we're getting out of those Japanese whiskeys that sit around 43. Much darker. I mean, you can see the color on this is almost an amber. It looks a little bit darker on the screen because of the lighting, but not a lot of tasting notes posted on the website. You can see the color here. It's definitely got more of a dark color to it. And let me see, if you go to the Stranahan's website, which is a nice website, they just don't give you a ton of information. They say all snowflakes, blah, blah, blah. Oh, they only do once a year. It's winter. So they're on number 18 now. Using a variety of unique barrels from all over the globe, our limited release Snowflake whiskey batches are first age to fruition no less than 2 years in new white American oak barrels with a number 3 char, which, John, you can probably speak more to that than I can. That's just the level of charring that it has.
Some people go with the number 2 and some people go a little crazy at the number 4, but number 3, I mean, if you know what you're doing, the number 3 is really where it's at.
So 1 would be like barely any char, 2 more, 3, blah, blah, blah. So.
Yeah, I'm cracking a little wise, but yeah, that's exactly right. It's and
I mean, where it's at. Got to be at the 3.
But charring is really a pretty specific art, because you really need to understand the wood to know how much you can char it to get the maximum amount of flavor with the spirit you're putting in. Because really, you char too much and you're not going to get the flavor out of the wood. You don't char it enough and it's just going to taste like oak. So there's absolutely an art form to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that has drastic influence on the flavor, as you say. They say it's 2 years in white American oak with number 3 char before transferring the finished whiskey into used wine, sherry, cognac, rum, or tequila barrels, absorbing the uniquely rich flavors from the casks. Snowflake is available 1 day each December at the distillery. So the 18 is coming out this year, or maybe the 19 is coming out this year.
Oh, baby.
So yeah, it's 1 day every December. So like I said, you're lining up in 0 degree weather to get your hands on this, and the presentation of their bottles, I really like it. It's very different. You know, they got the single strip, you know, going across. They come with these little, which I guess is kind of like a shot glass.
Kind of. I mean, that'd be a pretty generous
it's
a, pour.
It's a big pour, and that sits right on top of the glass, and it's yeah. So anyway. Yeah, and it's got their initials on the bottom there.
But how does it taste, Robbie? Everyone wants to know how it tastes.
It tastes great. I haven't taken any sips of it yet. The nose, and I'll give you a little bit of my experience here. A little bit sweet on the nose. A lot. It's definitely more boozy on the nose than the Japanese whiskey. You're getting a lot more of that alcohol. But there's this almost has a sherry kind of smell to it, so I wonder what kind of cask it was in. I could probably figure it out somewhere. I'm sure it's available online. But I'll get into this. I want to hear about your second pairing.
So I don't know if I'm just getting desensitized to peat, because I love peat, but this is a dram that would go so brilliantly with a lobster or a crab dinner, or, you know, even a chowder. because it's got just enough peat to make it really interesting without kind of being that Lafroy Lagavulin, which has its place. I mean, don't get me wrong. When it's cold outside, there's nothing I like doing more than taking a lawn chair, parking in front of a fire with a big stogie, you know, a Churchill or whatever, a Lancero, and going to town on my Lafroy quarter cask or Lagavulin or whatever. But this is kind of what I would describe as an elegant peated whiskey. I mean, at 25 years, sometimes whiskey can get really soft. You know, there is a fall over point with whiskey. I don't know what that is because I don't know enough about whiskey distilling to know what that is. You have to be a distillery master. But there's a point where you can age a whiskey too much and you lose the influence, you lose the cask, it becomes maybe too oaky, or you do lose peat quality over time. So if it comes out as heavily peated to begin with, 25 years in, it's going to be very lightly peated, but it's got that nice maritime quality to it without being too astringent. So it's just got a little bit of salt quality, which super fires your palate. Again, going really well with the cigar, although it is a tough follow-up to that Takatsura 21 because that is such a match made in heaven. This still works really well. The saltiness on the whiskey really brings out the chocolate on the cigar. It's, again, you know, it's like that salted chocolate, salted caramel combination. Works really well. It's definitely hot at 52 point whatever it is. It's hot. It's a fireball. But we got to get after it because I want to know the tasting notes of that Stranahan's. It's so good.
Yeah, man. It would not surprise me if this was aged in a sherry cask at some point. It definitely has some of that nuance. But the main thing, I get sweetness right up front. And it is kind of sits on the tongue, but it's kind of like a burnt brown sugar.
Mm.
I love that with a little bit of that oak and some vanilla in there as well. I almost said a bad word. It's bleeping phenomenal. It's fantastic. It's strong though. I mean, it's a kick. You feel it on the back of your tongue, the sides of your tongue, on your throat as it's going down. It's a giggity. It's definitely more of a heater. Not super hot, but it's definitely more of a heater than what I was working with the Hibiki. So big step in that direction. The pairing is really nice. It's bringing out more nutty flavors from the cigar, which I wasn't getting before. So I'm getting that sweetness, that kind of charred brown sugar, almost molasses, but molasses is too strong of a flavor. And that
like
vanilla,
a raw sugar kind of thing.
Yeah, like I mean, it's a brown sugar. It's like sugar in the raw. Is that what you're saying? But a bit more of that, like a, you know, you can get brown sugar as like a dark brown sugar or a light one. Mm-hmm. It's more of the light side. So it's a little bit sweeter. It's not quite as strong of the flavor.
Nice.
That vanilla, a little bit of that oak, and there's a little bit of that sherry kind of spice. And I might just be talking myself into that, but the pairing is, it's a big step up from where we were. That Hibiki was nice. This is next level type pairing here because it's a special whiskey. That's why I brought up special whiskeys for our special show.
Heck yeah.
And it's this cigar will always have a special place in my heart. Always. So, pairing these two things together is a thing of beauty for me. Yeah, definitely.
He's trying to make me weepy. It's not happening. Not until the After Dark segment anyways. So I'm going to get into my last pairing tonight because, we're doing a great job of matching our time tonight. And this is probably one of my favorite whiskeys of all time. This is the Aberlura Bunda. Or Abuna, sorry, terrible, terrible Gaelic pronunciation there. And I'll hold up the bottle so you can see that color. That is one of the sherriest whiskeys I've ever had in my life. This bad boy is 59.6%. I think that's like 400 proof, if you do the math of that. It's like 400 and, no.
It's get
like,
after it, man.
It's like 118.12 or whatever. Anyways, this is what's cool about this Abuna is there's no age statement. So it is, there's no age statement, but it's a different batch every year. And I love a lot of the whiskeys that Aberlour does. This is one of the special ones, and it changes from cask to cask. I've got the cask 37 that I'm drinking tonight. I've got cask 46, and I've done a side-by-side pairing. I don't know where I posted it, but I've done a side-by-side pairing, but look at that.
Mm.
I mean,
you're getting after it with these pours, buddy.
Just getting, well, you know, it's a long show and it's cold outside. It's therapeutic. And I mean, you smell this and there's no question. This is sherry for days. And it's that nice, you know, we've talked about it. It's when you get a really, really heavily sherry whiskey, you get just tons of stewed plums, stewed raisins, and stewed dark fruit with like spices and pepper. And it's a very sort of Christmassy fall, you know, pound cake kind of kind of thing. And I mean, you know, you see that and you're like, okay, yeah, I need to drink this immediately. And I know for a fact this is a heater. So the only concern I have about this is whether it's going to run over my cigar. But the cigar's been doing pretty good so far. So I'm gonna take some sips and let you get after your last pairing, because we do have a question, an audience question about that last one.
Yeah, man. I'm jumping into the final pairing, and I've been waiting to bring this onto a show since
everyone's been waiting.
Since I was able to get my hands on this, to answer the audience question, how I got it from a buddy who lives in North Dakota, I believe. North Dakota or Minnesota, one of the two, I'm not sure which. And he had a bottle, and I made it known I was looking for one in my circles, and he contacted me, and we did a gigantic trade. And I ended up with this fantastic bottle of Pappy Van Winkle's Family Reserve 20 years.
Oh,
now, Pappy Van Winkle is really interesting. And actually, there's a podcast called Criminal, and they do an episode about Pappy Van Winkle, about how it's so pop. The secondary market, the markup is ridiculous. I think the MSRP on this is like $150,
which is reasonable.
Which is, I mean, still, it's on the high end for bourbon,
yeah,
right?
But, yeah, but for a 20-year bourbon, I mean,
yeah, right. But at the same time, they sell on the secondary market for like $3,000,
uh-huh.
And it's ridiculous. And they've had issues with stuff getting stolen and blah blah blah. Anyway. There's not a ton of information on their website, oldripvanwinkle.com. They say no other bourbon today can stand 20 years of aging, but this bourbon does it with style. Pappy Van Winkle was a true character. This bourbon, like Pappy, is full of personality and makes it for a very special whiskey, blah, blah, blah. They're not giving me anything here. the tasting notes. see a dark amber and dark orange cast, and that's a very apt description when you look at this color.
Oh, yeah. That is dark.
Definitely, it's dark. It's got a little bit of orange to it. Not quite as dark as it's hard to see from the bottle as the Stranahan's, but it's definitely got some darkness there. This full body bourbon is reminiscent of oiled leather, smoke, minerals, coffee, and cigar boxes.
Nice
beauty. Take in the endless ranges of aromatics and flavors. Enjoy the infinite finish. Now, I don't know if infinite is an apt description, because
wow.
If you take it literally,
that's a long finish.
It's never going to stop.
No.
But that's not necessarily the case. For me, the nose, super, super rich. I mean, it's rich big time, like butterscotch and kind of more brown sugar and like butter. It's, the nose on this is beautiful. I haven't sipped it yet, so I don't know what the pairing is like, but I'm going to jump into it because it actually smells really sweet on the nose.
I can definitely let you enjoy that,
that
infinite finish. Talking about the Abel Arabina Cask 37, this is probably as heavily sherried as you can get without blowing your taste buds out. I mean, the combination of cask strength at 59.6 and the amount of sherry that's in this, and I've heard people talk about Abel Arabina, the amount of time that the whiskey, like typically I think they say when they make a bottle, The product is as much as 50% sherried whiskey, which is a lot because, you know, we've talked about it. You can go back to our past shows. We talked in depth about sherried casks being, ex-sherried casks being very expensive. And it's really everything I want in a sherried whiskey. It's just huge, huge, huge amounts of, like, dark stewed fruit, plums and raisins, et cetera, et cetera. But it's less spicy than I remember it. And I think that could be the cigar. It does a great job of offsetting some of that really intense, spicy pepper finish. Because you talk about infinite finish. A sherried whiskey can finish for like 5 minutes. I mean, you're still, you know, running your tongue around and you're still tasting that sherried whiskey because it's just such a palate dominator. But I dare say this might be the pairing of the night for me. Maybe just because I've been looking forward to this Aberlour so much and I haven't had it in a while. But the cigar still stands out, and that's impressive because at a whiskey this full flavored, this in your face with powerhouse, it's impressive for a cigar to stand up to that and really continue to come out with nuances, still come out with that nougaty, that spices and the pepper that I still can taste off the cigar, yet I'm still picking up the nuances on this whiskey. This whiskey is definitely going to carry me into After Dark because, as Robbie said, is a generous pour. That was actually a full-ounce pour, not the acceptable half-ounce pour, but it's my whiskey, so I can do whatever I want. Robbie, let's hear about that Pappy Van Winkle because I know our audience is really keen to hear about it.
It's good, right? It's really good. It's tough to live up to the hype. I mean, we know that with cigars, but we know that with anything, really. But this really does. There's this unique flavor that you get right up front, right when it hits the tongue, and it's almost like a citrus kind of tartness right up front. And I thought that maybe I was getting that because of the cigar, but I pulled up a little review here online, excuse me. And that's one of the things that they say right up front is you get like a lemon zest. It's not overpowering, but it's just enough that kind of wakes up your palate, right? And then it soaks into leather, and there's a sherry flavor in there, that sherry spice, the stewed dark stone fruits, like a stewed cherry. And there's some cedar in there too, like, and maybe that's from the cigar boxes. Maybe I'm being led astray. I got a mosquito that's getting Zika. That's getting all over my business here.
Look out.
So got him. But yeah, it's something that it's really hard to describe because it is so special. And sometimes something being this special, you can't get your hands on it. You open the bottle once a year or whatever, and who cares what it tastes like at that point? It's special. It's a special moment. And I mean, this is a special moment for me because, like I said, I've loved every episode that we've done on the show, and I've looked forward to it every week. And for it to come to an end for me is, like I said, it's bittersweet. You know, I'm moving into a different direction, and I'm happy in the direction that I'm moving into, but I figured there was nothing in my cabinet, and really, frankly, nothing in my humidor that would fit the occasion correctly. And I think this is as close as I can get. Like, the cigar fits perfectly because, I mean, this is the Cigar Federation cigar. And I mean, I was there when we made it. I wasn't involved in the blending, but we did taste testings and things like that. So, like I said, it's always going to hold a special place in my heart. And this whiskey is about as special as it gets. In my opinion, there's, you know, different things every year win that award. And what was it this year? It was Booker's Rye or whatever it is.
Which is really good, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
But it's no Pappy.
It's no Pappy. And this is a Pappy 20 years. Like, I never thought I would ever taste this stuff, let alone get my hands on the 20 years. So, and that finish is, the finish you're definitely getting, it's kind of a nutty finish, really. And a little bit of kind of a chocolatey kind of sweetness at the end. It's a beautiful, beautiful whiskey. There's a lot of flavor happening in here. The pairing with the cigar has become creamy. It's got a creamy texture to it now. The spice isn't there as much. Still getting that dried cocoa, but some nutty notes are coming out. We're coming out before that nougaty sweetness is still there. The pairing just goes really, really nicely. That kind of nutty, chocolatey finish. It goes right in with the sweetness and the nougat right at the beginning of the cigar, the spice on the end of the cigar, which isn't as strong as it was before. It kind of wakes you up for that. And then you get that tartness at the beginning of each sip. So the pairing really is special. And I'm glad that I was able to do that tonight. As John takes a sip of long pull, baby.
Long pull. Yep. Pull for days on that bad boy. Cause you know, it's a sherry whiskey and it looks like I'm taking big sips. But the thing is with 59.6%, if you take a big sip, your palate, you're going to get palate shock. Like you're not going to be able to taste anything. So you really got to kind of, it's almost like drinking a Slurpee where you take just a little bit and you kind of roll it around your tongue and just kind of let the flavors expand. She good. I think, you know, again, what I tried to do is kind of the same thing you did tonight. I tried to pick some special whiskeys that kind of represent a little bit of our history on sharing our pairings. This particular bottle dates back to Sharing Our Pairings episode 36. So if you want to go back and check out episode 36, please do. It's not going to be as good as episode 91, but it was pretty good. And there's no question for me, finishing on a high note, the Aberlour was a great pairing. Each of these is a great pairing on their own, but I wanted to finish big, and I did. Like you said, I think, you know, looking back at all the pairings we've done, and we'll talk more in the After Dark, I think this is a great way to finish the show with you. Having a Cigar Federation cigar, pairing with some really, really amazing whiskeys, whether they're American whiskey, whether the Scotch whiskey, whether the Japanese whiskey, all of these have had a place in our pairing notes, in our pairing hopes and dreams, if that's not too eloquent, too poetic, because, you know, Pappy is very special, and all of these whiskeys that we've shared together over the time has been special. And, you know, it's been a good 91 episode run with you, Robbie. And, you know, it is bittersweet. I know it's bittersweet for audience. It's obviously bittersweet for me because, you know, we've become good friends over the last 3-4 years at Cigar Federation. And, the nice thing is we're both still in the industry, so we're not going to be strangers.
Yeah, absolutely. How much time do I have left for my goodbye?
You got like
a minute
45.
Perfect. Real quick, you'll notice Pappy's smoking a cigar on the front of the bottle here. And, I think that's very fitting. And a side note, we did blind taste tests, my wife and I, with the Snowflake and the Pappy. And my wife actually picked the Snowflake, but she liked it better. We did that because those are our two nicest bottles and just figured we'd give it a shot. I picked the
Pappy. I told you we never should have married that woman.
For me, I don't want to sound like I know more than I do because I don't, but it was easy for me to tell the difference. This Pappy has a very distinct flavor. Yeah, man, this show has been great. It's, I'll always look back on our 91 episodes, and luckily I can watch them whenever I want or listen. Awesome. And, I mean, thanks to you, John, I've been able to try some whiskeys, Chichibu the Peated. I'll probably never get my hands on a bottle of that. But
IPCPR 2017, there might be some bottles coming your way.
You never know. But it's been an awesome experience. I want to thank everyone in the armed forces again, for the last time on Sharing Our Pairings. You guys are built to do something I'm not built to do. And I'm in awe of what you guys do. I come from a military family and I have nothing but respect for you guys. We're messing around with cigars and whiskey, and you guys are handling with real life. So I nothing but respect for you guys. So thank you for tuning in. I hope that we've brought you some laughs and some time to relax over the years. Yeah, it's been great, man. I'll still be around Cigar Federation. You guys can't get rid of me. And I'm going to be back on the show too. We're just going to be smoking Mombacho next time. That's all.
Mombacho.
No, it's been great, man. Thanks. Of course, I consider you a very close friend now, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been a great journey, and I feel like we've learned a lot, and I wouldn't change any of it. I wish I could still do it, but
yeah,
you know.
That's how it is. And like I said, I'm wearing my poppy. It's, again, it's a celebration here in Canada. Everyone wears a poppy. It's a throwback to a poem written in Flanders Field. It's our way of sort of celebrating and honoring all the troops out there, both past and present. Canada has a long storied history of military service, and obviously service in World War I and World War II in Afghanistan and conflicts around the world. So, you know, I kind of want to end it on a note that thanks very much for our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. Thanks for the opportunity to keep you entertained for this 58 minutes, wherever you are in the world. Hope that we've taken away from the seriousness of where you're stationed or even the boredom of where you're stationed. And we've given you some laughs, given you some stuff to think about, made you interested, made you mad, whatever that emotion might be. We appreciate that time. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks because I am going to be on assignment for a few weeks. So unfortunately, the internet's in the Nicaragua, not so good for doing Sharing Our Pairings, but we'll be back in a few weeks. And
Let me do the outro. Can I do the outro?
Do the outro, bro.
Because I've never done it.
Do it.
All right. Hope I don't screw it up. As we always say, and for my last time here on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less.
Now, we probably need to keep the cussing to a minimum because, of course, we're both classy individuals. And, you know, neither of us are Logan. We don't own our own store or our own site. You're in the industry. I'm in the industry. We're going to keep it classy tonight. But honestly, from the heart, Rob, it's been a great, you know, since we talked about the original show, for those who aren't aware, we talked about the show for like 6 or 8 months before we originally launched the show. And really, I think it was even Logan who said, like, just stop fucking talking about it and just do it. Like, and I go back and I watch the first few episodes and, you know, it's like anything. You put in a bunch of reps and the first, like, really the first 8 episodes are just, for me, they're cringeworthy. Because, you know, it took us a while to kind of – you had your legs from Cigar Chat, but I didn't have my legs for Sharing Our Pairings for quite some time. But I think, you know, once we got into those sort of teens episodes, we really started rolling with it, started getting into those beer pairings. And, you know, we had a lot of fun. I mean, we've had a lot of memorable pairing experiences. You know, I think back to the Drew Estate, the Drew Estate series, which is a lot of fun. And I think back to like the Glory R, you know, that was a great moment where, you know, and a perfect example of where the pairing doesn't have to be good to be entertaining. Yeah. It was still a lot of fun.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. I remember back at some of those first episodes, and I had been doing Cigar Chat for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years by then. I don't even know how long it was. And you're talking and I'm like trying to like nudge you like, okay, move on, move forward, say this, come on, John, you can do it. And it was hard because I think if you go back in some of our first episodes, I kind of step over you a little bit because I was trying to move things moving forward. Along. But you've come a long way. I think like we both come a long way. And I mean, I don't know if we'd call ourselves professional podcasters, but you know, we've learned a lot and the pairings have been fun. I mean, and really the one we'll always remember is the La Gloria, and I was smoking this. It's the Series R Esteli. Yeah. You were the Series R Black, or Siri, yeah. Not Series. And man, it was just so bad. Oh God, that it was, the cigar was fine. The cigar was good, mm-hmm. But throwing in that ginger ale was just a mistake. No bueno. But at the same time, I mean, you gotta make some bad choices so you know when you made your good choices. And the thing that will always stand out to me from this show was we never thought we'd be able to pair an IPA with anything.
That's true.
And it got to the point where it's like, man, let's do an IPA show every week because we both love IPAs. And I mean, some people don't, and I get that. But it ultimately, for me, when it comes to pairing, there's right ways to do it. There's wrong ways to do it. Pair what you like. I mean, that's as simple as it can be. If you've got a whiskey that you like, or a bourbon, or a soda, or a tea, or whatever, you're going to find a way to like it. I had a cigar earlier today. I was smoking a Tierra Volcan Classico earlier today, and I paired it with some unsweetened black tea, just iced black tea, and it was fantastic. And I never would have done that before, but I had the black tea. I was drinking it. I lit up a cigar, and hey, it works. You know, I mean, if you find things you like, you never know.
I have it on good authority that pairs really well with champagne.
That was not the Tierra Volcan that we smoked
it was,
that night.
It was the Liga Maestro.
10th anniversary.
No,
we smoked the 10th anniversary, correct. Yeah, yeah. And that does pair very well with the Veuve Clicquot. And you know what? We had some champagne pairings at IPCPR, a couple of different places. Veuve Clicquot both times, which happens to be my favorite champagne. I'm a bit snobby, but it's... I'd take Veuve over Dom. I don't know. There's something about the flavor in Veuve that just rubs me the right way. The Johnny Gill, that song rub you the right way, or Johnny Gill?
Mm-hmm. That's music. Music is a black hole for me.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, Johnny Gill had me saying my. That was definitely Johnny Gill. Back in the day. That's high school, man. I was into the R&B slow jams in high school. Watch out. Champagne. Woo, that's a good pairing, dude. Mm-hmm. That's a good. I don't remember what did we pair the champagne with? That
the Yamasa.
The
Davidoff Yamasa.
Is it Yamasa or Yamasa? Yamasa. It's Yamasa.
Are we not saying the same thing? Are we doing that thing? Yamasa. Yamasa.
Is that like the Vanilla Ice VH1 where he says that he's not sampling? He said, "Well, there's his dum 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 da da dum dum." And ours is dum 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 da da dum dum. We're clearly different. It's totally different. Yeah, right. Clearly
different things.
Yeah, that guy. Is that our first Vanilla Ice reference? Can't be.
Yeah, no, I think that might be
actually. Oh, it can't be. It can't be. We're both old.
First
enough.
And last, because the 80s are long gone. But I want to give a quick shout out to some of our guests over the years, and I'm trying to remember all of them. So, first of all, I apologize because I've had some whiskey, and if Robbie can maybe fill in if I forget some, but one of our first guests, Omar De Frias, when we had our coffee episode, Omar popped on for a little bit. He had a scheduling conflict, but we still had him on the show, which is a lot of fun. Tony Bellotto's been on the show a few times. Tony is one of those guys, you know, we pale in comparison to his expertise on wine and pairings. I mean, he's really got an expert level of knowledge.
Well, he's a sommelier.
He's a
sommelier. It's a little different.
It's a little on the different side. Tony Bellotto was there. Fred Rui. We've had Fred a couple times. And, you know, Fred is, first of all, he's a great guy and he's a great friend. And he's a lot of fun. He's one of those guys, you know, Fred doesn't have anything about him that is put on. Fred is who he is, and he never puts on a show. He just, you know, and that's a great thing about Fred. He's so approachable, and I think it comes through on the podcast, you know, when we have Fred on. Of course, we'd be remiss to not mention our friend Victor Vitale, who we had a hilarious moment at the IPCPR talking about Japanese whiskey. And I'll never forget, we're, you know, waxing poetic about cigars, and we started talking about Japanese whiskey. And Victor just busts out his phone and calls his guy. And he says, yeah, no, I need this Chijibu the Peated. You got a couple bottles? Yeah, okay. Just, you know, set it. And Rob's looking at him like, who are you? Like,
yeah, he's the master, dude. That was impressive. And don't talk about the show like it's ending. The show is not ending.
No.
The show in its current form is ending.
The show with you as a co-host is moving on. But I just want to give some love out to the people we've had with you as a co-host. Claudio Segroe. Claudio was a great guest. Claudio is a great guy, and you know, I couldn't welcome you into a better place than Claudio with that company, because he's just a genuinely great guy. And hopefully, I don't know what his schedule's like. Hopefully, we can run into him in Miami when I'm down there on the weekend. Johnny Brook, of course, which is funny because it took us forever to get Johnny Brook on the show. And Johnny's just, you know, he's a beer fiend. We hung out with him in New Orleans and had a great time at this kind of, like, literally a hole in the wall that we kind of had to wander down weird stabby back alleys in New Orleans to get to. And treated us to a great time. We had some great beer. One of those really, really cool places. And, of course, Robert Holt.
Yeah.
Robert Holt, super classy guy, love his cigars, had a lot of fun. I'm sure I'm missing some guests. I know we've had some great co-guests when you've been absent or I've been absent. Of course, we've had both guys from Stogie Geeks, Will Cooper and Paul Asadorian have been. Will was on the show for pop pairing, soda pairing, which Will doesn't really drink, so it was a great opportunity for Will to kind of, because Will has an amazing palate. Coop has an amazing palate. I mean, I check out his stuff all the time. So he kind of did some pop pairing, which was a lot of fun. And Paul Asadorian's like you. Paul just tears up the cocktails. So that was kind of an easy sit-in for Paul. And, of course, we've had some great experiences with Aaron and June from Developing Palates, who also have stepped in over the years to guest co-host or just come on the show as guests to pair with us. I'm sure I'm missing somebody, Robbie, because we've been around for a while now.
Man, I wasn't checking off the checklist. I feel. Do we have Enrique from 1502? Did he ever come on?
Oh, wow, that's embarrassing. Enrique, I can't believe I forgot Enrique.
No, I know we talked about it, but it definitely happened.
Yeah, we had Enrique on the show, yeah, and it was a great show.
Some rum pairings there, and I'm just going to echo, and I don't want to go too far on the Mombacho thing because then it sounds self-serving, but. You nailed it with Claudio. I mean, he's an awesome guy. We've been able to spend some time with him. I mean, just here's an example. We definitely had him on the show, and he paired with Pilsners, which he loves his Pilsners. but he loves his rum too, boy.
Woo,
he likes the rum. But at some point we had talked about, he had mentioned Florida Cognac 25, and I didn't even realize that there was such a thing. Mm-hmm. I knew it went up to 18. I didn't know there was a 25. And he's like, I'll have a bottle. We'll try some at IPC.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I just, you know, pull it out of my reserve. Like, it's no big thing.
And it's funny because he brought it up again this past weekend when I was getting ready to come home or packing last night. And I was thinking, okay, what am I going to get from duty free? Which I ended up getting nothing, by the way.
That's a duty free fail.
The duty free pricing is interesting. I was looking at some of the pricing, well, at least in Nicaragua. The stuff there was more expensive than what I pay for it. Everything except Florida Cognac. Florida Cognac was cheaper. Huh. And I asked him, I said, hey, how much is the Florida Cognac 25? He's like, well, it's $140.
That's not bad.
A bottle at the at duty free. And I think it's like the only place you can get it.
Interesting.
And he's like, yeah, I know, because I bought a bottle specifically for you guys. And you know, I mean, and we sat down and we drank some of that 25, which was I didn't buy a bottle of that. I don't know. It was early in the morning. I don't know. But I didn't, but I'll be back down there. It's not my last time. So, I'm sure I'll come back with some bottles and, maybe I'll go down there before IPCPR, John, if you want one, I'll bring one for you. But,
Well, I'm gonna have the opportunity because I'm gonna be down there.
Oh, you're down there on your own. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, I'm taking just so people know. Like I said, I'll be gone for a little bit here on vacation. It's a working vacation because I'm taking down. For those who aren't aware and haven't been paying attention, I like Robbie. I moved into the industry in a different way. I'm the general manager for really the largest true tobacconist in Canada. We're at 16 stores, and looking at my calendar, we're going to be at like 25 or 30 stores next year, which woo! But one of the fun things for me is my boss, who's as much a cigar nerd as I am, and he's been pretty much everywhere. I had the fortune to go down to Cuba with him. It was his first opportunity to Cuba, and it was actually the time where we got to introduce him to coffee with Hamlet Paredes, who is now with Rocky Patel, and we kind of peer pressured him into coffee, and now... You know, he's a regular coffee drinker as a result. He's been to Honduras, he's been to the Dominican Republic, but he's never been to Nicaragua. So I was like, okay, you know, I've been to Nicaragua. I feel like, you know, I have the ability now to kind of show him around. So I've been kind of working, talking to some people in the industry and basically saying, look, Jeff's coming down. I kind of want to just blow it out of the water so that all I hear for the next 6 months is how he went to this factory, and it was the best experience of his life. So we're going to take our franchisees down and kind of show them the Esteli experience and walk them through the process. And for me, that's a lot of fun. I've been down there a bunch of times like you have. And it's not that it gets old. It's just when you go down there for the first time and you see some of the stuff for the first time, it blows you away. Like you see all those glassy, wide eyes. They're so amazed, and it's going to be kind of fun to see me that experience, relive it through them while we're down there.
No, absolutely. And you got to bring them to Granada, man. Have you been to Granada?
So, quick funny story. So I went to on the Drew Estate Cigar Safari. The first trip I ever took was I think it was 2013. Back in the day, as they say, and the first trip was to Granada, and it's a gorgeous city. If you haven't been to Granada and Nicaragua, you're doing yourself a disservice. Now, this was, I think, before the time Casa Vivili was open. And, you know, you do the boat tour, you check out the lake, there's some killer restaurants there. We stayed at this beautiful hotel that had an open-air patio and a pool, and it was an amazing experience, but I haven't been back since, well, to Granada. But I've been to Esteli a bunch of times, and... Claudio kind of took me aside and said, look, bro, like, is it something personal? Like, you go down to Nicaragua, like, sometimes twice a year, like, do I smell funny? And I'm like, no, you know, Esteli's in one direction, Granada's in the other. So I said, look, you know, as a part of our trip planning, we have to go through Granada because I feel like Claudio's just going to send me a sad face emoji if I go through Nicaragua one more time and don't visit Casa Favilli and see him. You know, I feel like at that point, you know, especially since he's an Italian guy, he might actually start to take that a little personally. So within our trip, we've kind of designed it that the end of our trip, we're going to drop by, stay in Granada for a couple of days, visit Casa Favilli, see Claudio and the team. And I'm really looking forward to it because I haven't been to Granada in a number of years. And also, again, because I get to see that through Jeff's eyes, and Jeff will see that all for the first time. And yeah, it's going to be an amazing experience, I think.
Yeah, I don't want to go too much into the Mombacho thing. But I've been lucky enough to go to a lot of factories. Casa Favilli is a very unique experience. And you don't need to say very, but very unique is redundant. I get that. It's a unique experience, man. It's unique. When you get down there, make sure you find Benoit. He'll be there, and introduce yourself because he likes the pairing show. And yeah, so you definitely have to do that. But Granada is just so different from Esteli.
It's totally different.
It's the same country. The weather's different. It's hotter in Granada.
Way hotter.
Esteli is up in the mountains, so it's a little bit cooler. Or I don't know if it's mountains. Is it hills? Mountains?
Oh no,
whatever.
It's in the mountains. It's like, it's, you know, it's like 3,500 meters elevation or something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely cooler. But Granada has more of a tourist feel, which I know sometimes can be a negative thing. But I mean, there's nice restaurants. I was trying to pull up a picture of this fish that I had while we were in Granada. We went the last day for lunch, we went to Vias Mombacho, which is this little resort kind of area, and they have this restaurant that's right out over Lake Nicaragua, which is freaking huge, by the way.
Yeah, it's like the third largest lake in the world.
Yeah, it's gigantic, and you look out over it. And not to
derail your story, but I remember them telling me when we were doing the boat tour, they're like joking about the sharks in the lake. I'm like, yeah, I get it. You know, gringos on the tour make some jokes about the sharks and like, yeah, I get it. And then it wasn't until afterwards I realized, no, they weren't pulling my leg. This lake is so big. It has freshwater sharks in the lake. It's like a mini sea, really.
It's gigantic, and this would be a perfect time to show the picture of the fish that I ate, because it was the local whitefish. I don't remember what it was called. It started with an M. And they just serve it to you, just a fried fish. And I wasn't expecting the entire fish, but, I mean, the head is still on there. And this thing had teeth. This was a River Monsters type situation.
Nice.
If you've ever watched River Monsters, great show, by the way. If you haven't, please watch it, because Jeremy Wade, that guy gets after it. He's nuts. But that show's awesome. But this thing was like, I'm glad that it was on my plate and I was eating it. Otherwise it would have been trying to, you know, get a piece of double R, you know, to take a little bite. But, it was quite good. But, Granada's an experience, man. And, I want to hear your feedback on Favilli. It's, the people are great. The building is awesome. And the view on the 360 view on the top is, it's unparalleled, man. I mean, you're looking out, you can see on a clear day. It wasn't too clear when we were there. You can see Ometepe. You can see, you see Mombacho. Mombacho volcano is right there. And so it's huge. You can't miss it. And you can see a couple of the other volcanoes. I think there's 7 or 8 volcanoes in Nicaragua, something like that. My knowledge of Nicaragua as a country is sadly limited. So I want to rectify that. But yeah, it's just an awesome town, man. And I had a blast. And like you were talking about Claudio, he's such a class guy. He picks me up at the airport, and I'm used to going to, and I'll talk about this more tomorrow probably because we have an hour to fill, but I'm used to going to Nicaragua on cigar safari.
Yep.
With a group of guys, you know, and you're going through customs. It's intimidating. Mm-hmm. There's guys with machine guns. It's intimidating. And this time I'm there solo the whole time. And luckily I'd been there a few times, and I knew that you need to have 10 bucks to pay to get into the country and that kind of thing. I'm walking out and I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to find Claudio? Cause you know, it's hot. There's a lot of people, there's a bunch of taxis. Everybody wants to take you somewhere.
Everybody wants to take you somewhere.
And you just said, no, you gotta be polite. But Claudio was right there. And I go up and I go to shake his hand, and he just gives me a big hug, you know, and it's like, welcome to the family type situation. And
nice.
I can't be happier. I couldn't be happier with my decision to join Mombacho. It's a great company. And if cigars are phenomenal, it doesn't hurt. I was smoking Liga Maestros and Tierra Volcán Clásicos right off. I mean, 4 days old.
And there's worse things in life.
And it was beautiful. And I smoked some other stuff that I can't tell you guys about. But there's some phenomenal stuff happening, man. I'm telling
Claudio,
you.
If you're tuned in, I hope to see the curtain pulled back when we're visiting Granada.
No maybe pressure. a little bit, but I gotta learn. I need to learn my Espanol, bro. Mm-hmm. I noticed the more that I drink, and we were very professional on the trip, but the more I imbibe local beer, what have you, more Spanish comes out. And I know a little bit more than I thought I did. So it's
feel a little more confident.
Yeah. And this is the last thing I'll say. Towards the end of the day, we were at the factory all day, and there was a meeting going on. I wasn't in it, and I didn't really have anything to do. So I go down to the front, down to the big staircase, which you guys will see when you go. But it's a beautiful building, and the tour guides Benoit and Brian. And Brian reminds me of a younger version of Pedro from he has the same energy, and he's so excited about what he's doing, and he's great. I mean, he knows his stuff too. And and we were talking about how when Brian learned English and good ways to learn Spanish, and he's giving me all these great tips. And Mauricio, who was our driver, he doesn't speak much English. He speaks a little bit, but not much. About as much Spanish as I speak, right? So we were in the same, and he comes over and he's engaging me in Spanish, and he's speaking very slow so I can understand. And I'm understanding like everything that he's saying, but I can't reply to him because it's speaking is for me has always been more difficult than understanding.
Yeah.
But, and I had my translators there.
Yeah. Got us translators.
I had my translators in Brian and Benoit. So it was cool. You know, to teach the gringo how to speak a little bit of Spanish. It was, we were down there for about an hour. It was a lot of fun. But that just gives you kind of a glimpse. I mean, they want to include you in everything they're doing. And that's not Mambacho specific. That's the Nicaraguan people, man. Mm-hmm. They are some of the most generous, happiest people I've ever met in my life. Ever.
Yeah, I would absolutely echo that sentiment. I think I've been to Nicaragua and I've been to enough places in Nicaragua and experienced a little bit of the culture. And obviously I keep going back. So obviously I'm having a good experience and absolutely very patient, very welcoming. Even, you know, even talking about the airport experience when people are, you know, they're hustling a little bit because they want to make some money. But when you're polite and you say, you know, no, and no, I'm good in Spanish, you know, they're cool. They smile, you smile back, and it doesn't have that feel like someone's trying to hustle you. You know, they're very polite. They're very patient. And, you know, wherever we went, whatever restaurant we've gone to in Nicaragua, people have been very pleasant, very gracious with both their time and patience. And, you know, it's a beautiful country and beautiful people. And, you know, they just had an election, not to get political. They just had an election, and I hope that, you know, things for Nicaragua continue to improve because I think the people there deserve it. I like to see one of the fun things for me has been going back to Esteli year over year and seeing the improvements. Last year when we went down with the SIGFED crew, you know, we were, as I say, coconut shovels, building ditches, digging ditches, and changing lives, building houses, and it was a nice way to give back. And that was kind of a cool experience for me to participate in. Obviously, we did a big fundraiser and were able to build 5 houses. And it was a tough experience. I won't kid you. It was a hard work. But at the end of the day, you know, seeing the family move in and seeing their tears of joy, I mean, that made it all worthwhile. It was a great chance to give back.
Yeah, actually, when I'm glad you brought that up. When I was flying from Managua to Dallas, which is a significantly longer flight than Managua to Miami. There was a group there with me that, or on the flight, and I was sitting kind of in the middle of all of them. And they were, you know, the folks speaking English on the flight, but they were down there building houses as well. And they had been down there for a week and they weren't with, it wasn't with Techo. It was with some other, I don't know if it was Habitat for Humanity or what have you. It may have been Habitat for Humanity. But it was pretty cool. I mean, this was 10, 15 people, all very different backgrounds, you know, doing their thing and building houses for people who, when you go down to Nicaragua, and they weren't in Esteli or Granada, they were maybe in the more rural areas. So when you get down there and you have to, if you love cigars and you love people, get down to Nicaragua any way you can, whether it's safari or you come down to see Favilli or just take a trip or go down and build houses. These guys were, you could tell they were really happy with what they were able to do. Very fulfilling experience. And one other thing, this last thing I'll say, I mean, one night we went to dinner at a German restaurant of all things.
That's not what I would expect in Granada.
Yeah, right. place called Charlie's, and Charlie is awesome. And we're sitting down at dinner, and there was the 4 of us, Charlie and his wife. And so there were 6 people and all 6 different nationalities from 6 different countries.
Wow.
It was kind of a beautiful thing, right? It was, and everybody was, they're speaking and then somebody would translate into English for me for the most part. But I'm picking up on most of what's going on unless Charlie started speaking German at one point. I was like, I got nothing there. But it was a lot of fun. And they do an interesting thing around Election Day. Election was the day that I flew out last Sunday. They, for the 3 days leading up to it, they stopped selling alcohol.
Yes.
In restaurants and stores and stuff at the restaurants, I think it's at 6 o'clock. They stopped serving alcohol, which I think was interesting. But from what I understand, the election, everything went off without a hitch. So that's
no
good.
Violence, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Always good.
And I'd be lying if I didn't say that I'm happy that we're going after the election period, because there was a little bit of uncertainty as to what was going on in Nicaragua. Obviously, I enjoy both the Tona and the Florida Canyon in Nicaragua. They're both very, very enjoyable. Tona is more like water for me. Especially, you know, after we've done all these pairing shows and these heavy beers and light beers and medium beers. But, you know, I'm very much looking forward to enjoying, as I always do, both the cuisine and obviously the spirits and beers that, and, you know, cigar too, more down in Nicaragua. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Absolutely, man. Enjoy your time down there. It's a blast.
So this wraps up episode 91. Farewell to Rob. And, again, you know, can't say enough, Rob. Thanks very much for being on the show and being our, co-host for 91 episodes. It's been a lot of fun. You know, Rob and I will be in touch constantly because we're both in the industry.
Yeah, and, you're one of our
I'm a customer now.
One of our retailers now.
I can be one of them big pains in the asses, which is you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I'm sure we're gonna have some events up here in Canada, which hopefully we can drag Robbie up here for some events.
Nice.
At which point, I guarantee there will be an absurd amount of whiskey available to Rob from my collection, and it's gonna be a free pour. But for those who've tuned in for 91 episodes, we will continue. We'll find a new, probably have a couple guest hosts, maybe Trent. Trent will sit in as a guest co-host. That's
just interrupt. Joke. Did you see that? I don't know if it was, it was on Facebook, I think, or somewhere where I typed this is for Trip, and he was on a show, and they kept, the guest kept calling him Trent. I don't remember who it was. I typed in Trip, and it auto-corrected to Trent, which was just beautiful because you can't plan that kind of thing. It was perfect.
Yeah, and you know, we're gonna have a series of guest co-hosts over the time when we sort of reestablish ourselves as sharing our pairings. But we'll be back. Like I said, we'll have a couple episode breaks just as I go down on site. We'll continue to have cigar chat, of course. And I'd be remiss to say, obviously, you have to tune into Cigar Chat tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. I'm sure Logan's going to be a little surly, as he normally is. I'll be serving as the Conscious Canadian to moderate things, as it were.
Oh, you're going to be there too?
Yeah, you know, I might pop in for a little bit, just you know, a little farewell. But I feel like, you know, I don't want to steal the thunder because I think the best Cigar Chat shows have been the Robin Logan show. So I'll pop in, say my piece, and then pop out. But we'll be back in a couple weeks. And as always, sharing our pangs, drink better, but drink less.